All right. So, last week we discussed issues related to meat and to the issue of glot. So we'll continue in this same chapter, picking up on page 197, source 18. So tonight we'll talk about liver and we'll talk about issues with buying fish from a store and the kashrus of fish. And then I think as indicated before, so try to do everything related to blood next week. It's not such a long shiur. And then we'll take a week or two to discuss issues related to insects. I'll discuss this a little bit more, but the last week in February, we're going to have to move the shiur date to Monday night instead of Tuesday night because I'll be out of town. But more come. No, that's like the February 27th. It's a while away, but just like into the singing to the end of the month, the next few shiurim. So when it comes to liver, liver is a unique issue because when it comes to most meat, so if I salt the meat, then most of the blood usually is removed. One exception to that is liver because the liver is so saturated with blood that regular melicha, regular salting is not sufficient. So that presents particular issues. And with that said, the Gemara is very explicit that liver can in fact be kashered. Liver can be allowed. And this is like a very interesting Gemara because the upshot of this Gemara is that it has a very interesting theological implication that everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu forbade us from doing, he gave us something in return, so to speak, that we are allowed to do. Sometimes people think, it's not fair. We have all these restrictions, and I want to be able to do what everybody else is doing. Many situations, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us something corresponding that's permitted. Look at the Gemara source 18, on page 187. Amrale Yalta le Rav Nachman. Yalta is a significant figure in the Gemara. She is the wife of Rav Nachman. Many of you maybe have heard of Bruria, the wife of Rabbi Meir. Yalta is a similar figure. She was the wife of Rav Nachman, but also herself very knowledgeable in Torah, and she's quoted in a number of places in the Gemara.
Is she in Bavel or in Eretz Yisrael?
I want to say in Bavel. It's a good question. Stop me. I want to say Bavel. So Yalta says, "Mikti kol de'aser la rachmana shar la kvaseh." Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu prohibited us from doing, he gave us something similar that we're allowed to do. So asar lan dama, he forbade us from eating blood. Shar lan kvada, he allowed us to eat liver. So that's where this comes up. So even though we're not allowed to have blood in our food, liver, you're not allowed to have the blood from the liver, and we'll talk about removing the blood, but still, this idea is that there that the permission to eat liver corresponds, is meant to sort of counteract the fact that we're not allowed to otherwise have things that would be bloody.
It's become a staple in Jewish food. Is there anyone who's machmir and they don't eat liver?
No, Gemara explicitly allows it.
Yeah.
So, hey, if you practically don't want to deal with the issues that come up, then that's a different story. But there's no idea that a Yerusha mind doesn't have liver. Right? Gemara is very explicit about this. Although, the next example does have a sort of application of what you said, Herb. So when it comes to Nida, so a husband's not allowed to have relations with his wife while she's in Nida, but there's the concept of Dam Tohar. So after a woman gives birth, so she has a certain number of days that she's considered to be Nida and not allowed to have relations. And then there's a period afterwards where if she bleeds, it's considered to be pure blood and they are allowed to have relations according to the Din d'Oraita, according to the Din d'Rabbanan. Later became a minhag that we do not, I guess already in the Rambam, there's a minhag not to allow relations even with Dam Tohar. But in theory, despite the prohibition of Nida, there is the permission to engage in relations when there is Dam Tohar, when there's blood of purity, a certain number of, for a certain period after childbirth. Behema, we're not allowed to have certain fats of a domesticated animal, but for a chelev chaya, when it comes to an undomesticated animal, you're allowed to have the chelev, which has the same flavor. Chazir, we're not allowed to have pig. We're not allowed to have pork. But mocha, the shibuta, the brain of a shibuta fish, which allegedly has the same taste as pork, is permitted. Likewise, giruta, one can't have a this particular type of non-kosher fish. But lishna, de kavara, the tongue of a particular fish is permitted. And likewise, ishet ish, grusha b'chayi bala, so you're not allowed to have relations with a married woman, but a man may have relations with a divorced woman while her husband is still, her ex-husband is still alive. A man's not allowed to have relations with the sister, with the wife of his brother, but there is a concept of yibum, that levirate marriage, in which case a man might be required to have relations with his brother's wife. There's a prohibition of having relations with a goya, with a non-Jewish woman, but there's the institution of eshet sifat toar, that a woman in captivity, who's a prisoner of war, so that's allowed. So then she says, "Be'ina l'mecha bisra b'chava." But what about when it comes to dairy meat? So what's the equivalent? I'm not allowed to have dairy meat together, but what's the equivalent thing that I'm allowed to do that sort of corresponds with that? Amar Lahur of Nachman. Rav Nachman replies, or actually he says to his cooks, Latabacha, he says to his cooks, Zviku la kachale. To roast udders on a spit for her. So the udders, there's concern with, on the one hand, it's meat, but on the other hand, there's concern that there's milk that remains, but there's a way to have udders that is permissible. So that's kind of the dairy version of liver and udders are two sides of the same coin, right? Absolutely. Liver is the meat that we're allowed to have despite the potential presence of blood, and udders is what we're allowed to have despite the potential presence of milk. But the upshot of this
version is that you have powder milk.
That's also right. So exactly right. You could have Herb was saying, so now you can have like a parve cheeseburger or something like that. So that gives you that possibility exists as well.
Almond milk,
right? Parve milk, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Tony.
It's not directly to the point, but if you buy a chicken and you look at it and the chicken looks like the drumstick or whatever is bruised or bloody looking, does that make a treif? I mean, obviously we're buying it from a kosher butcher.
If it looks bruised, I don't know if that's an issue related to a treif, like literally what we were talking about last week in terms of treif, in terms of an injured animal. So that I don't know 100%.
Related to this, also all liver is the same, chicken liver and steer liver and calf liver.
Good question. So we'll discuss the distinctions there in a short while. Yeah.
I'm sorry, the other thing is a fox. We used to eat chicken hearts years ago.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's full of it.
You
don't see it nowadays.
I don't know about chicken hearts, but the upshot of this Gemara is that liver is permissible despite the existence of the presence of blood in the liver. But then we have the issues, of course, of how we deal with how do we deal with the blood. And in next week's shiur, we'll talk a little bit more about why there's a prohibition of blood and more about that. But we're going to sort of focus on the practicalities of kasher and liver. So Shulchan Aruch says in source 19, a kaved yishbo ribui dam, there is a lot of blood in a liver. It's not enough just to salt it. That's not going to be enough. You have to slice it or tear it in a crisscross fashion. So that makes it, that enables the blood to flow out. And then you place the cut part of the liver is face down, and then salehu, then you can roast it to the point that it's edible. And then after that, you can cook it in the regular fashion. So the method suggested here for removing the blood is by cutting the liver in a crisscross fashion. It'll enable the blood to flow out, and then you have to roast the liver sort of face down. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Ramah says, "V'nagu shelo limloch kaved klal afilu levadav." So we said before that salting the liver is not enough, and the Ramah says that in fact the liver should not initially. It's kind of a word. It's a little bit misleading, but the liver initially should not be salted, right? Should not be salted by itself in Lashanos, and that's the minhag. Because the concern was that if you salt the liver, let's say far away from the time that you're cooking it, so then the salt will absorb the blood and the salt, and then that bloody salt remains in the liver, and you still have a problem. So the suggestion here is Rakish Lamalka Ktsakshi Hitchula Bishiput should only salted once it is stuck on the spit or only when it's placed on the fire roasting. Because at that point you're close to the point of roasting it, and then in the process of roasting, the blood will disappear. But until you're at that point, what?
You have to salt it even though you're roasting it?
So no, you don't have to, but if you want to, that would be the point that you're allowed to salt it, is right before you're about to roast it. And then the custom was to rinse the liver after roasting it, to mishum dam hadavukba, to make sure you rinse out any blood that remains. But if you did not rinse out the blood, if you did not rinse the liver, I guess as long as the blood is not, very visible, then it is permitted. So that's one thing that the Ramah tells us about roasting liver. Then in source 21, he adds, "V'ish omrim detzali by hadachat chila." Some say that you should rinse the liver before you cook it, before you roast it. "V'ish omrim detzarech gamke ktsam alichat chila." Some say that you should salt it a little bit before you roast it. "Aminhak ladiach chila v'gam l'malchoktan." And there is a custom to both rinse it first and to salt it slightly. So this is the Ramah's approach. This is the approach for Ashkenazim. The Sefer HaKashrus, kind of contemporary Sefer that we've quoted on a couple of occasions. So he says, source 22, "Tzlias hakaved te'az al gabe lehavas ish beinonis." You should cook it on a medium flame. "Or b'chalim l'chashos abor mechol chomer be'ir ashehu." For embers have been ignited with any material. Because the concern is that if you cook it on a fire that's too low, so then it's not going to be broiled sufficiently. But if the fire is too strong, then the outside of the liver will get burnt, and then the inside will not get broiled sufficiently, and the blood will remain. So recommendation is to broil it on a medium level fire. Okay, they include here strong instructions from Rav Heinemann about preparing and cooking liver. I don't want to read the whole thing inside because that'll take a long time, but on page 199, so a couple of highlights. So first of all, we're talking about an animal liver, talking about beef, calf, etc. So he mentions what we said from the Shulchan Aruch, that you have to make deep crisscross cuts throughout the liver in various places to allow the blood to flow out of the liver. And he says, to this end, the cuts should lie facing down during the broiling, again, as we mentioned from the Shulchan Aruch. And he says there is a more practical way to do it, which is also acceptable, which is to slice the liver into pieces of uniform thickness. And then if the liver is kosher in this fashion, crisscross cuts need not be made.
Well, they have to be careful it doesn't fall. If you have a grate that has these things on it, you don't want to make it small, the whole thing falls.
Right.
It has to be on the grate.
Right. So then when it comes to chicken and fowl, so he says that you can broil without cutting the surface, but the gallbladder would have to be removed. Okay, so now the process. So he says that the liver, the slices of liver that were cut into the pieces with uniform thickness, it should be thoroughly washed off in cold water and placed on a grate of fireproof material. The grate has to ensure that there's nothing inhibiting the blood from flowing from the liver into the pan. and the blood and the juice, etc., should flow in such a fashion that it's not going to come back in direct contact with the liver, right? We want the blood to be removed. We don't want it to come in contact with the liver again. And then he says the liver is in lightly salted on both sides. He says it's customary to put at least the amount of salt that would give the liver good taste. The salting is used to, as an aid to the fire to facilitate extracting the blood. One can use more salt if they wanted.
What point is this then?
Then?
The liver is then, after doing what?
After
boiling a little?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. First you rinsed it and then you put it. He doesn't mention salting it before you begin to boil it, but fine. But so then he points out that saying salting the liver is not compulsory, and boiling process can be accomplished without salt, as Herb said. Right. So the salting is not required, but could be done to enhance the taste, could be done to make it easier to extract the blood. The broiling should be, the fire should be ideally below the liver. If need be, it could be above, but it works better when it's below. And then you have concerns that in general, blood is considered to be iser. Blood is considered to be forbidden substance. So what happens to the oven? What happens to the utensils that you're using to make the liver? What happens to the pan? You know, the liver slowing onto a pan, the skewer, all of that. So what happens to all of that? The answer is that all of those utensils should be exclusively used for liver or be considered treif, essentially. Right? So if I have a pan under the liver,
if you're not allowed to eat blood.
Yeah. Same thing.
We can't hear Herb's comments.
So Herb was objecting to the notion that the blood makes the utensils treif to the point where, let's say, you know, if I use a fork with bloody liver, I should not use that fork for other flashings, right? So all this is outlined here, but the pan onto which the blood is flowing, forks, etc., have to be used exclusively for liver, and likewise, one has to be careful that the blood does not flow directly onto the oven, the oven racks, and the like, or that would have to be koshered as well.
But if it's in the oven, it's going to spray all over the walls of the oven when you're broiling something. I don't know.
It splatters like all. It's not just below. It's going to splatter all throughout.
I don't broil for that reason.
Splatter blood will make the oven or broiler wall treif. Practical solution is to place a pan under the rack or grate to catch the dripping blood and juices. So that works. It works, but again, that pan would then also, have to be used exclusively for liver. But yeah, that's the thing is that if you were to do that in an oven or to splatter throughout, then you have to kosher. So then at the bottom here it says the koshered liver is washed off under cold water 3 times in order to remove the salt that has absorbed the blood, any blood found on the outer surface of the liver. These procedures have been followed, and red juice exudes from the liver interior. The liquid is not considered blood, and it is permitted to be eaten. Last thing I'll point out, and I'm not going to read everything on page 200, but last thing pointed out is that frozen liver should be completely thawed out before attempting to broil it. Otherwise, it won't be broiled all the way through. Okay, so that's about liver. Any further comments before we go on to fish? Okay. So fish. So something peculiar about fish, unlike other species that we eat, is that fish does not require shechita, does not require slaughtering. That's something that's discussed explicitly in the Gemara, source 24, page 201. Page 201, source 24. So the Gemara asks the question, Dagim delav neshchita nin hu minalan. How do we know that fish do not require shchita? So ilema mishum dichtiv atonu v'akar yishachet lahem. So the Torah says explicitly that that flocks and herds have to be slaughtered. Yemet called the gehayam ye asef lahem, but fish is merely gathered. So the one pasuk you have a mentioning of slaughtering animals, but fish are merely gathered. But let, so it sounds from that, but sifa ba'amasagi lahu. It's enough just to gather the fish, take it out of water, no need to shecht it. So that's what the pasuk. But then the Gemara says, elamei anta gabislav jichti ve'esvut haslav. So when it comes to quail, there's also an idea of gathering quail. Ba'achinami de la bishkita. So maybe quail also shouldn't require shkita. So what the Gemara goes on to say is that when it comes to quail, so it talked about gathering quail, but it wasn't in the context of anything having to do with shkita. But birds do have to be shechted. But when it comes to fish, the fact that fish are just the fact that the pasuk discusses gathering fish in the very same pasuk as it mentions slaughtering animals means that there's a distinction between animals that need to be slaughtered and fish that do not need to be slaughtered by shkita. So that's how we know.
What is that called? Marika? And they did the finger on the bird.
Marika.
So that's not, we don't do that.
That was only a thing done in the Beis HaMikdash. It was only done in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, page 202, source 25. What makes fish kosher? Etzetok will be kosher by mine. This is what you're allowed to eat from creatures in the water. Kol asher los napir v'kaskeset. It needs to have fins and scales. B'mayim b'yamim v'nachalim otam tochelu. Right, whether it's in the water, the sea, or the river, all these are fine. The Mishnah notes, Mishnah Nida notes, in source 26, kol sheyesh lo kaskeset, any fish that has scales, yesh lo snapir. By definition, it has fins. If the fish has scales, it definitely has fins. B'yesh yesh lo snapir, but there might be some fish that have fins, but they don't have scales. So practically what that means for halakha, yeshul kaskeset v'yeshul snapir dak tahor. If you know that a fish has scales and fins, it's definitely a kosher fish. If it has scales, it likely has fins, it's a kosher fish. Yeshul snapir v'yeshul kaskeset dak tame. But if it has fins, but you can't see the scales or it doesn't have scales, then it's a non-kosher fish. That's what the Mishnah tells us.
So surgeon.
Yeah, so we'll get to sturgeon and swordfish. We'll get to the sturgeon and swordfish in a second. The Shulchan Aruch quotes this in verse 27. Right, so he says outright that if somebody finds a fish that has scales, so he doesn't have to worry about finding the fins, but he finds a fish that has fins. So he can't eat it until he knows that there are scales. The Ramban elaborates. So there are different biological definitions and issues that come up in terms of how to define what scales are, what's considered to have scales. So the Ramban says, "Kaskeset elu hakvuim bo lashon Rashi." So scales are those that are fixed on it. That's what Rashi says. But you'd have a problem that if the scales are permanently attached to the fish, so that would be a problem. So the idea of kavua, the idea of them being fixed, is that they don't move or shake like the fins. They are the round outer layer, meaning in English, whose crust is like a fingernail, and they are removed from the skin of the fish by hand or by knife. So you need to be able to remove the scales by hand or by knife. But if they are permanently attached, then it's actually not going to be a kosher fish. So the Ramah says in source 29, the daka shehim niklapim beyad o bekli. Aval im iev shtar lekalpan beor hadag lo mikre kaskesed. So scales are not sufficient to permit the fish be eaten if they are permanently attached. So this is where the issues related to sturgeon come up, as noted in the footnote, because the scales can't be detached easily. So therefore, sturgeon is considered to not be kosher. Swordfish is a big controversy, because they say, so although swordfish do not appear to possess scales at all, Some claim that the scales are so tightly embedded into the skin that they would make a hole if pulled out. So this is, so Herb mentioned that this was a dividing point between conservative and orthodox halacha, that conservatives allowed swordfish to be consumed while orthodoxy did not allow it. The orthodox psak to not eat swordfish was a psak of Rav Moshe Tendler Zatzal, son-in-law of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, and then I think the ninth grade Rebbe of Rav Herschel Schechter. And I mentioned that he's a ninth grade Rebbe of Rav Herschel Schechter because Rav Schechter at some point recently came out and said that he disagreed. I don't know if this was only recently that he said this, but it did come up recently. He said that he disagrees with Rav Tendler. He says that swordfish, b'ikar din, according to the letter of the law, really should be kosher because what Rav Tendler was saying about the scales not being there, et cetera. So Rav Schechter says that that's not accurate. But Rav Schechter feels like at the same time, Rav Tendler did a service because it caused a certain divide between conservative and orthodox. Rav Schechter thought that wasn't such a terrible thing. That there was a distinction between halachic regulations there, but Rav Schechter would argue that swordfish, technically speaking, should be kosher. But to this day, it seems that the policy of the OU is not to kosher swordfish. Surgeon, I think, is definitely not.
The appetizing store always has surge.
In source 30, we're told by feel in el stop here chad kas keser chad mutter. It's enough as long as it has one fit and one scale. That's enough to make it kosher. And likewise, we feel in lo ata the atu the god lam lachar man. If they will grow fins and scales, or they have them, but then when they're the scales fall off when they're brought into land, brought out of the water, then it's permitted to eat them. So tuna fish is an example of that, where the scales fall off before. They fall off as they are brought out of the water. Rama has particular stringency about if there's only one scale, but not essential right now. So Rav Chaim Goldberg in FAQ about kosher fish, looks like it's something that was published originally by the TRC. So to know if the fish is kosher, so one has to ascertain that, first of all, that there are scales. You also have to ascertain that the scales can be removed, right? Because we mentioned before that if the scales can't be removed, then it's not kosher. And it has to be able to be removed without damaging the skin, right? I mean, obviously, you can pull off the skin and then the scales are no longer there, but the scales have to be removed without damaging the scales. With that said, two more quick things to discuss. So number one, fish that's filleted. And I think this question I think this came up sometime recently, right? What happens if you go into a fish store and it's not a kosher fish store? So how can you know that the fish is kosher? So obviously, if it's a complete fish, then you're good. But the Sefer Kashrut notes, if a fish has already been filleted and there's no longer any skin or bones, you can't have that fish without it coming from somebody who is trustworthy in matters of kashrus, and you can trust that he saw the kosher signs, or that there's a hashkacha. But once a fish is filleted, you can't just walk into a generic fish store in Yuppetsville and assume that it's kosher fish. And the reason for that is that apparently, even if you're an expert in fish, you know, you're some sort of, I don't know, zoologist is right, you're a biologist, marine biologist, whatever it is, I don't know what the right profession there would be. But once fish is filleted, it could be hard to tell what fish it is. And kosher fish and non-kosher fish that are filleted can look similar. So that's what Rav Chaim Goldberg was on to say in source 205.
What if you go into a fish store and you look at the fish, it's a kosher fish, and then you ask the fishmonger to fillet it? Is that okay?
Okay, so that would be the next thing we discuss. But again, if the fish is already filleted, if it's not a kosher store, so we don't, not unlike with, let's say, Chalav Yisrael, we did not, we do not make assumptions and we cannot assume that it's a kosher fish. That's the upshot of sources 32 and 33. So, yeah, so what happens if you want to go into a fish store? The fish is whole. You've ascertained that they're skilled on the fish. But I want the person in the store to fillet the fish. So that's source 34. Shulchan Aruch says, Chatach Kishuim Besakin Shel Basar Mutar Lochon Bechala Begreda Belvat Shigro Memakom Atach. So unrelated to fish, but he says, if you cut cucumbers with a meat knife, it's permitted to eat them with dairy, with scraping of the cucumber alone, if you scrape the location of the cut. What we're essentially communicating here is that we assume that if you cut the cucumbers with a meat knife, so there's some meat residue on the knife, so you'd have to scrape off the location. So the concern, as brought in source 35, that's in English, the concern that comes up is that if the person in the store is cutting kosher, non-kosher fish at the same time, so you can't necessarily assume that the knife is clean. And even if they say they cleaned it, you can't ascertain that the knife has been cleaned in a way that there's absolutely no residue and that there's no non-kosher fish substance on it. So the suggestion given is that you should bring the knife to fillet the fish. And if the store will not allow you to bring a knife, then you would have to supervise the scraping of the knife and to make sure that it is 110% clean. He says that standard cleaning does not guarantee that the grease has been removed from the knife, right? So again, that's a metzias, that's a practicality issue. But that's the concern of just walking to a fish store and saying, okay, so I know this fish is kosher. Can I have them do it for me? But they can't use their knives. If they use it for non-kosher fish.
It's the issue of fish boil.
It's just about the residue from the non-kosher fish, because again, that would in part taste it, that would be problematic. So that's liver and fish. Thank you everyone for joining me. And there's Hashem, next week we'll be talking more about the issue with the blood.
I'm sorry, about what?